Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, Natalie. I feel like this is the first. We can be both sides of the aisle. Technically, you are right.
Absolutely. And we have a pause here with State Auditor John Dougal as he's a candidate for the 3rd Congressional District and a little bit of a blackout period as we approach the delegate convention.
Right. And he is further right than you are. And we do have a new guest who will be joining us. But, you know, it's kind of that late season where people are getting colds, not feeling great still. So I think this weather is
just
also impacting it. It's just the two of us today.
Well, let's start. Let's go to Washington and go to this spending bill. $1.2 trillion bill passed Congress, gets us through October. It has a lot of, what should we say, fireworks associated with it?
Yeah, I think that's right. For me, certainly there are elements of the spending bill that are of concern, and there's been a lot of great reporting on that. So I'll leave it to individuals if they're interested to kind of understand more what's in it. But the thing that I think is the biggest firework is that it also led us to a situation where now the speaker, Mike Johnson, who has been trying to wrangle a pretty unruly GOP caucus majority by now even fewer votes, which we'll talk about in a second. Marjorie Taylor Greene has called for basically put him on notice that he mm-hmm. could be ousted. Mm-hmm. What do you think when you hear that we're heading back into this again?
Well, it's something like 5 months since Kevin McCarthy was ousted. I think it shows a Republican Party in disarray. I think it shows that Marjorie Taylor Greene is more about her than she is about patriotism and our country and the success of our country. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, Shireen. It seems like this speaker has gotten a lot of people interested in him because he's navigating it, even if it's not completely successful. But I even heard late in this that several Democrats were rooting for him and trying to help him as he navigates a pretty trying time.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I do have to say, for a person who is, ideologically pretty far afield from my priorities, probably holds beliefs that I find quite outside of the norm, but then also outside of my own personal preference. One of the things that I've heard in governing, right, is that people, even if they're quite extreme, if they're put in a position of leadership, sometimes what they have to focus on is just getting the business done, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he did.
Yeah. And I can bring some local parallels. I mean, our speaker, Mike Schultz, I mean, he's elected to represent a House district of, not a lot of people. But when he becomes House Speaker, he has a responsibility to the body and to the entire state.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't trust someone like that with so much power because they're elected by such a small portion of the state. But others elect them to lead the body, which is the case with Speaker Johnson. Now, Shireen, again, on the Republican side, we've got what you might call GOP quitters. What's the news there?
So we've got a number of representatives, and this is normal in each cycle. They announce they're not running for office again. But in this case, the consequences are really extreme, right? So now we have, I think just this week, another two or three Republicans have announced that they are not running again, but also two that are leaving now are leaving very soon.
Yeah. Resigning the seat. Yeah.
So my understanding is that now the Republicans have a one seat majority. And when you think about how difficult it has been to wrangle that caucus anyway, to get Republicans together on any meaningful legislation delivering for the American people, I think now you can expect even less. And there's been quite a bit of reporting also that has said this is the least effective Congress in recent history, possibly in recorded history, because they are at such a tight margin. And I would say trying to score political points over doing the business of government.
Yeah. Shireen, I read an article this week. I'm always drawing from my reading on this program, but I was reading President Reagan's second inaugural. And they say that your second inaugural is always much richer and more heartfelt meaning because you've been in the office already for 4 years, And so it's different than being in office for 90 days.
Yeah.
And anyway, he gave this beautiful unifying speech. I recommend it to all of our listeners. And afterwards, some of the commentary, a Senator Joe Biden just praised the speech.
Okay.
Said it was unifying. It was electric. And I'm just like, whoa, where'd this come from? I read some of the Washington Post coverage after President Reagan gave the address. Anyway, I was just like, you know, tapping my head over how much things have changed.
They have.
And Ronald Reagan in this speech said so many things that to a moderate like me spoke to the political middle and had, you know, people on both sides of the aisle praising what he'd said. And here we are today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that time is largely gone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because it also means that people aren't getting served by their government, mm-hmm. right? We're seeing things like the impeachment of Joe Biden, which sounds like it's losing steam. The impeachment of the Homeland, you know, Director of Homeland Security. Just different kinds of shenanigans, I would mm-hmm. say, honestly, that are more about fundraising clicks mm-hmm. than they are yeah. about the actual business of people.
In the speech, he talks about the Song of America, and he talks about Valley Forge and the Alamo and the Civil War and about the Westward Movement, you know, all these things that kind of are part of our history
yeah.
and the Song of America. And it's just, I recommend it to people. If you want to get some good sort of bipartisanship, post-partisanship, it's the place. It's a great speech.
Well, and it used to be that disasters brought us together. And there was another one just this morning. What did you see?
So this is the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. It's in the Baltimore Harbor. It's an absolutely essential piece of infrastructure for that city. You know, a massive cargo ship lost propulsion after it had left harbor and just started coasting. And a Mayday call was issued, and this cargo ship hit into the bridge and took it down. And
yeah.
We're still, I, you know, as we're recording this, still in the rescue phase. But there were construction workers on the bridge working on potholes, I think six of them.
Yeah.
I think those are some that they've had trouble finding. But you mentioned it's been politicized.
It has already been politicized. So as you know, we're in election season here, and we do have Representative Phil Lyman running for governor. So my understanding, and Natalie, you brought this news piece to me, so please catch me up if I'm getting this incorrect, but candidate for governor Phil Lyman is saying that the reason that the bridge collapsed is because of diversity.
Mm.
Now, why would he say that? What,
yeah,
how did?
Yeah.
What's the red string on this one?
Yeah. So, Phil Lyman's someone I consider a friend. I like many things about Phil. I don't agree with him on this issue.
Okay.
He essentially tweeted something to the effect that this is what happens when you prioritize diversity over the well-being and safety of our citizens. And the idea is that there's a commissioner over the Port of Baltimore. Sorry, commissioners over the Port of Baltimore. And some of those appointments appear to be appointments to have more representation of diversity.
Mm.
And he, you know, was saying something about that. I would say on this case, I'm more in the line of Governor Cox, who tweeted, you know, terrible news out of Baltimore this morning, prayers for the people impacted by this tragedy.
Yeah.
I think that's the right response.
That's the right response. And certainly I don't think a diverse set of commissioners with authority over the Port of Baltimore took out power on a cargo ship that then drifted into a bridge. I mean, the like actual logical pieces of putting that together make that argument so disingenuous. But I do think that it is part of a broader effort to really tie everything back to a grievance politics. And mm-hmm. I don't think that's good for us. And it's not good for Utah.
Shereen, let's finish out this segment by talking about President Trump and some of the things going on. And I just have to say to listeners, when we had President Trump, he was on the program a lot. Then we got a new president, and there were actually several months when we didn't even use the name. But now it's back in. And, you know, we've got this civil fraud case. Is it the appeals court lowered the judgment?
The judgment, yeah, because he was unable to come up with the money.
So it was $464 million. Now it's $175, and they gave an extension. And it looks like, you know, the likelihood is that the former president will be able to bond for this or find the cash. But never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. But also, I would just ask people to be thinking about the broader strategy. I believe that this is a president who is trying to stay out of jail, who's trying not to be accountable for crimes that have been committed. And there, I just would ask people to think really deeply. And I think our results from the preference poll suggest that there's a lot of room for Utahns mm-hmm. to think about a different kind of leadership. You know, Nikki Haley's out of the race now, but I would just invite people to think deeply about what it means to cast your vote for somebody who's really using the system to benefit themselves.
I'll make a prediction here, but right before I do that, we also got the news that in the hush money trial, April 15th has been set as the date. So the president, former president, got good news and bad news.
That's right.
Both in the same day. on the Nikki Haley point, I think it's pretty clear when you think of you know, the states that are close in the presidential election, that those Nikki Haley voters are going to be pretty valuable to President Trump. And I'm going to make a prediction here today,
okay,
Shireen, that there'll come a time when President Trump's narrative will try to woo them in.
Sure.
It's not happening yet.
No.
And they say something like half of the Nikki Haley voters plan to vote for Biden.
Yeah.
It's very much a protest against President Trump, a lot of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I, you know, I support that protest.
1 minute left in this segment. It looks like the former president saying he'll debate. The question is, will President Biden debate? What are you saying over on the left about President Biden potentially not being agreeing to a debate? This will affect us because we're scheduled to host one of the presidential debates here in Salt Lake City.
I think we're going to see debates. I think they are sort of a standard practice and we should expect them. I also think just fundamentally, debates do not have as big of an impact on voting individuals as we would like them to have. I think it's important for us to continue to have these kinds of dialogues, but I wish that we had them more often. I wish we had them on a wider set of topics. I wish that we had the opportunity to engage in ideas more deeply. I think the presidential debates as they exist are really for insiders. I don't think that they sway voters.
Maybe it's why I like them so much, as I'm sort of a hobbyist in this respect. But I will say that I think it is an absolute responsibility of candidacy to participate in debates. Well, we've got lots more news to talk about in the next segment. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani. Stay tuned, everybody.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner on the right. And this is both sides of the aisle. I'm also in the middle.
You're in the middle, too. Today, you
but I'm definitely right of center. And we have a vacancy right now on the right as John Dougal is taking a pause as he's a candidate for the 3rd Congressional District.
But now, Natalie, you also have another job where you do quite a bit of research and really lead, I think, important conversations about what's happening in our state. And my understanding is that today you have a little bit of information to share about what's going on in Cache County.
Yeah, I've taken an interest in northern Utah.
Yes.
And it includes the Bear River Valley, Box Elder County, and Cache Valley. These are just really interesting parts of our state. So often we turn to Utah County. We forget what's north of us.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something really interesting. This is for our northern Utah listeners. But northern Utah is differentiated. And it's differentiated because of a college town.
Sure.
Certainly Utah State. But also because of all the manufacturing that occurs there. And a lot of it is what we would call, you know, food, kindred products. It's a lot of Cache County agriculture.
Yeah.
You know, you go up to Logan and there's cheese.
I was going to say, I've been there. Dairy.
Yeah,
dairy stuff.
There's,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
honey.
Yeah.
Lots of things. But I have become persuaded that this area of our state is something to keep an eye on. It's going to experience a lot of growth and change over the next 10 to 20 years. If you think of Tremont,
yeah.
where you have I-84 and you have I-15, I-80, you know, corridors leading there, it's a crossroads. I think there's some pretty interesting future for this part of our state.
Are we already seeing the same kind of population growth that we're seeing in other? I know that we have a couple of counties that have lost population.
Yeah.
Cache and Box Elder are not.
Both growth areas
yes.
and both migration areas.
Yes.
People
so
moving there. But what really differentiates them is the structure of the economy is different.
Yeah.
And so and they build things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty cool that it's the manufacturing center of our state.
It is interesting because I do think you're correct. When we think about manufacturing, I kind of think about, yeah, Utah County, Point of the Mountain, like, you know, metals, like different kinds of things that are happening down there, even kind of smaller scale, but production, manufacturing. But when I think about Cache County, I do think about expansive agriculture. I think about different kinds of industrial mm-hmm. investments.
A lot of the state's water. Comes
yes,
through the Bear River that
water.
Flows through here.
Yeah.
Utah State has a new president. She's terrific.
Yeah.
So I look for really big, wonderful things to come from northern Utah.
Well, I love northern Utah, so I'm excited
beautiful.
To hear that.
Yeah. One time, Shireen, I was doing a tour of the state, and I was up in those Black Hawk helicopters with, you know, I was a staffer, but
yeah.
we're flying around the state. When you come up to Cache Valley, it looks visibly different.
Yeah.
Greener.
I believe
yeah.
it.
More lush.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
One other thing. They're very connected to Idaho. And
yes.
so the boundaries become almost seamless up there, and they're so the southern Idahoans become very much like the Utahns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah. No, I'm always happy to talk about, you know, areas outside of Salt Lake County.
Let's talk women's sports. Good and bad.
Good and bad. I'll start with the bad.
Okay.
So our First of all, huge congratulations on a great season to the University of Utah women's basketball. They have some incredible players. It's been so fun to watch them.
The word on campus is they are electrifying the games.
Yes, we are season ticket holders. Wonderful. And I'm not the biggest sports fan of all time, but it is really fun to go to those games. So they were just playing in the March Madness, right? Mm-hmm. Heading into trying to get their way into the Sweet 16 in, I believe, Northern
Coeur d'Alene.
They were in Coeur d'Alene.
Panhandle, yeah.
Panhandle of Idaho, and experienced some really vile racism, racist epithets being yelled at them, shouted at them from individuals in trucks as they're in the parking lot of their hotel. This happened numerous times. They ultimately ended up moving the location of their hotel. And I saw that the head coach came out and just said, you know, we know that this exists, but like to really experience it was so horrific, mm-hmm. so visceral. I don't know if you have any reactions
on
that.
What I thought was interesting is some of the commentators that experienced this, they said it made them feel numb.
Yeah.
I thought that was such an interesting choice of words. And I think what they were saying is just like disbelief.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, that we come up here at this celebration of sport and bring our best to the court and we're hosted by this community and we're, you know, deeply offended, hate crime like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible. On the other, I guess, end of the women's sports news spectrum, it's the return of the Royals. Have you been out to a Royals game yet?
I haven't been to the return. I've been to the ones in the prior when we had the franchise before. Of course, I played soccer for 25 years, Shireen.
Yes,
you know that about me.
I do know that about you.
I started up on front to the listeners. My favorite position was midfield, and then I ended my career at right back because I could hold on to people and not get caught because I wasn't fast enough. You know?
Yes. So the only sport that I played in high school was soccer, and I try to get out and play even still, play on some pickup teams around town. But I will say this, like this was, it was incredible. It was electric to be there. I was at the first game and it was just wonderful to see a full stadium. And my understanding is a record was broken in attendance for a women's sporting event in Utah. So that happened just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's terrific.
If you can make it to a Royals game, please do.
Shireen, I went to the Women's World Cup when U.S. played China in the Rose Bowl. This is when Brandi Chastain ripped off her shirt and was on the cover of Sports Illustrated in her sports bra. Maybe you have an image of that.
I was there.
But I remember seeing a young man in the stands with a Mia Hamm jersey on.
Yeah.
And I just went, wow. Yeah. Young men wearing women's sports jerseys now.
Women's
We've
sports
come a long
is on
ways.
The rise.
We've
gone on
a
the
long
rise.
Ways. I want to talk about Senator Lee being on Donald Trump's short list for U.S. Attorney General.
Checks out.
Yeah, yeah. It has a consistency, doesn't it? And I guess Senator Ted Cruz is on that list as well.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is a dark vision of what we could be expecting with a Trump second term, I guess. This is not surprising to me, but I guess it does help make sense a little bit of the ways in which Senator Lee, who, as we remember, I think if we're, you know, political creatures like we are, tried to lead sort of a last-minute effort to ensure that Trump was not going to be the nominee in 2016 from the convention floor. That mm-hmm. was, you know, he was leading that charge to ultimately making some comments. My understanding are that they were quite offensive to practicing Mormons around kind of idolizing Donald Trump with highly religious rhetoric and ideas that are, I would say, saved for people who are leaders of faith leaders, mm-hmm. you know, important figures in Mormon history. Now, I just feel like the way that he has just wrapped himself around the axle, Senator Lee, over and over again to really just defend, ignore, or support what Donald Trump says, all of this makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember I had a brief moment when I was a college student with Mike Lee's father, who was the Solicitor General at the time. I was over coffee and politics up on campus. I got the chance to introduce the Solicitor General.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting how life moves, because I would have never imagined that the son of our Solicitor General in the Reagan administration would be in these kind of waters where, you know, you're this close to someone who I think is so flawed in character.
Yeah.
So that's just me. Now someone further on the right might have a different perspective.
That's right.
Shireen, Utahns have been compared with California in terms of their support for the LGBTQ+ community. Some surprising research data.
So a recent report I read in the Salt Lake Tribune was noting that Utahns I guess I would say support for the LGBTQ community is actually higher in comparison to a general poll of Californians. And I guess the question that I have here is, what do you think is going on, right? So when we think about the way that we think about Utah as a faith-based community, which it isn't categorically, but more so than a place like California, what do you think is happening when we think about things like feeling more friendly to Utahns being more friendly to LGBTQ individuals on things like being refused service or different issues like that? What's your read on
this? It's hard to put a finger on it. I think a lot of it deals with lived experience. And if you know gay individuals, transgender individuals, your love just grows and grows.
Yeah.
And I have to think that some of that is what affects this.
I think some of that is at play. I also have to say, I think there's something my very first year at the University of Utah, I took queer theory with Professor Catherine Bonstockton. And one of the things that she noted was that Utahns really do have an affinity or understanding of what it means to be queer, a feeling of being different, of being outside. And I do wonder if Utahns generally are able to build an empathetic bridge, understanding that sense of being different or othered. I wish that we dug deeper into that well, honestly.
Yeah.
But I think that there is an element of that that resonates with me.
We have a long ways to go.
Yeah, we do.
Hey, I got another one I want to talk about.
Okay.
Governor Cox vetoed 7 bills.
Yeah.
And
was it the bathroom bill?
I know.
Anti-DEI?
Or
nope.
Purchasing of a power plant? None
nope.
of those. But I found this really interesting because we've talked a lot about, legislative power versus executive branch power. And how there seems to be some slippage.
Yes.
And these checks on the legislature, and one of them is the veto pen. One vote cancels out some things.
Yeah.
I loved his line about sometimes there are bills that could be phone calls.
Yes.
That meant something to me.
Yes, I think it does too. I will say this is a lesson that I learned when I was serving on the county council. So much work can happen when you just sit and meet with leaders of different departments, understand what's going on, think about priorities and the way that we're investing in the work that we do, and then also really understanding if you want an administrative change, you can often negotiate that with the system, right? Like with the systems that exist, with the government as it exists. Many of the pieces of legislation that were referenced in that list of 7, as I recall, were kind of like making sure that this training is required and making sure that this little administrative change is made. And I think he's right. A lot of that work can happen with personal relationships that you build, questions that you ask, conversations that you have, and certainly do not need to take up our legislative time. I will say I was proud to see our governor use the veto power. I think it's unfortunate that it was used on things with such low consequence when we really had some deeply troubling bills passed with, frankly, poor execution, not well-written bills that are creating a world that's... I mean, we just had the horrific news of a young trans Utahn was killed just this last week here. That is a result, I think, of the kind of rhetoric that's allowed and permissed when we see anti-DEI, anti-trans bills signed into law. So I'm disappointed that he didn't use it when it mattered, but I think it's good that he used it now.
I'm going to put on, Shereen, my conservative cap and say we got too much government going on.
They passed
591 bills. And you have to remember that they're doing this every year.
Yep.
And so in 12 months' time, they made the decision that there were 591 things that needed to change yet again.
Yet again.
You know?
Yeah.
And just like I used to not be in favor of term limits and now I am, I'd love some limits on bills.
On bills. I think
prioritize them. You know, we're going to cap it. We're going to cut the number in half and we're going to use prioritization and our caucuses to prioritize bills, but we're going to cap these darn things.
That's right. Well, and one thing that we've mentioned.
I've never heard anyone have a movement towards that, but I'd support it.
I'm into it. One of the things that I think, you know, stood out to me was really the restrictions that we saw, the amount of decline in kind of open understanding and transparency with what our legislators are doing with their time. So this was an issue around calendars and open records. So it was SB 240, and it rewrote the open records laws, which exempted elected officials and state employees' calendars, with the exception of another bill that they passed, which is going to require the district attorney's office in counties of the first class. There's only one in Salt Lake County to start reporting their time in 15-minute increments. Right. So to me, the amount of I guess I would say just conflict here where we're saying one thing out of one side of our mouth and another out of the other is really disturbing to me. I think, first of all, the lack of transparency is bad for people. And I hope that as we're heading into convention season, if you're engaged in the political process, if you're deciding between candidates, ask if they think it's okay to work on your behalf. You're paying them to be there. and they won't tell you how they're spending their time. Mm-hmm. You should ask if they'd be willing to have open calendars.
Mm-hmm. And I think you'll see a move with a lot of politicians to say, I'm voluntarily going to do that
yes.
and have a public calendar. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Shereen, we have 1 minute left in the program. Any observations you want to make to our listeners about things going on in our state, the vibe, what's going on?
Yeah, I would just say, I think the people are still pretty disengaged when we're thinking about the political process. We've got some big races, governor, mm-hmm. our attorney general, mm-hmm. Multiple local
races.
U.S. Senator. Multiple,
all of Congress.
Multiple local races that have a big impact on your day-to-day life. Now is the time to get to know these candidates and really start tracking what they're going to be doing and what they would say in representing you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gourbani. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.